The Maine population count not only takes place every 10 years, it also requires 10 years of planning. For 2020, that job falls to Lisa Blumerman, director of the 2020 count at the Census Bureau. As you might have guessed, the Bureau is deep into preparing for 2020. I asked Blumerman for a status update and a sense of the scope of the mission for which she's responsible.
Planning the decennial census is one of the most complex plans that we have to put together. It's an exciting and incredible opportunity, but it does take us a long time to plan the census. And in fact, we start planning the next census long before we even take the current census. It's just a wonderful opportunity for us.
And how did you come into this job? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Thank you. I'm an applied demographer by training. And so interest in population dynamics has always been something that I've been very interested in. I've actually worked for the Census Bureau for almost 20 years. I've worked in just about every program that we have, both our population programs as well as our economic programs. And working on the census is part of who I am. It's part of what I do. It's part of what we care about. I'm extremely passionate both about the 2020 census as well as the American Community Survey. And the opportunity 2 years ago to come back to the Decennial Directorate and work on the census was something I couldn't pass up.
And when we think about the decennial count, most people, I guess, including me, look at it as a technical problem of how do you get all the counting done. But you're a demographer, as you just said. What are some of the other factors you have to consider in planning something that will come out pretty accurate?
Accuracy in ensuring a fair count is the cornerstone of taking the decennial census. And the decennial census is more than about just counting people. Counting people is very important to us. But what's most critical for us is ensuring that we count everyone once and only once and in the right place. The data from the decennial census are used for apportionment. In order to have that information, in order to do that, we must ensure that we've counted everyone and they're where they need to be.
And so you have to do operational plans both for use inside and because Congress has a keen interest in this and always have. So tell us about the operational plan. It's a 10-year plan. We're more than halfway to the next one. Are you more than halfway ready?
We are ready for the census. You know, planning the census is a 10-year activity, and we were really, really pleased and excited in October of this past year to be able to release the operational design of the 2020 census. That design that we released lays out a firm foundation for what this census will be. And this census will be like no other census that we've done. It's a tremendously exciting time. But with the release of that design, we were able to demonstrate that we're able to conduct an innovative, a modern census using new data, new techniques, and all different resources. And this census will actually avoid spending money. It's an opportunity for us to do good government. It's an opportunity for us to avoid spending $5.2 billion. And while we still ensure an accurate and fair count.
And I remember 10 years ago and even 20 years ago, maybe the 1990, the issue came up as to whether some kind of statistical extrapolations could be used, or did you have to literally count every nose? And Congress wouldn't hear of any kind of statistical extrapolation or whatever the correct word is. Is that part of it? Is that one way of getting nowadays? Is it one way of getting around some of the cost and complexity?
Not at all. The census is about counting everyone once and only once and in the right place. And it's about ensuring that everyone has multiple opportunities to participate. We collect the census data through various means. The first way we go about it is through something we call self-response. And through self-response, we provide the public numerous opportunities to respond on their own for their household, for their address. They can respond via the mail. They can respond via the internet. For the first time, we are fully embracing the internet as a response option. They can respond by telephone. And if they choose not to respond or if they're not able to respond through any of those means, we'll then go out to find them and we'll knock on every door that we need to knock on in order to ensure that we get that complete, full, and accurate count.
All right, let's talk about the internet for a moment, because again, that's also been a holy grail, not just in 2000, but maybe in 1990, but certainly in 2000 it was, and in 2010 it certainly was. What will it mean for people to use the internet? So I get something comes to my house, how do you envision this actually working?
Sure. The use of the internet opens up worlds of opportunity for us in order to help us ensure an accurate and fair census. The highest quality data we get are data that information that people provide themselves. And by offering the internet as a response option, we're providing multiple ways that respondents can reply to the census. They can stand up, they can be counted. The use of the internet, though, is not just through that response mechanism. We're also going to be using the internet to help us reach people. We're able to do targeted advertising. advertising. We're able to reach them via social media. These are things that we've successfully tested most recently in our 2015 census test in the Savannah, Georgia media market.
But will data from individuals about themselves come to census via the internet? And if so, what will the individual see and experience in sending that information through the net?
Absolutely. Through the use of the internet, we're going to have, and we've been successfully testing, a response option that respondents can log on to the internet either with a controlled ID number that we would provide to them, or if they happen to not have that number handy, they can still log on and go through a different process and provide their census information to us. We've successfully tested our internet application in our 2014 census test and our 2015 census test, and we're very excited because in the 2016 census test that will occur in parts of Houston and in parts of LA, we'll be testing a new internet collection tool, one that's been designed specifically for the 2020 census.
And describe that tool.
So what that tool does, it's still an internet data collection tool. It's still a web interface, very similar to the current tool that any of our respondents to any of the Census Bureau's current surveys might see. But what it does is it increases capacity behind the scenes. So our infrastructure has been changed. The way it processes data has been changed. It allows for a very large concurrent load. And when we're talking about an operation as large as the decennial census, where we need to count 330 million people, 140 million housing units, having something that can handle the load that we need for the census is very, very important.
And so that's a scale somewhat larger even than, say, the IRS.
It could very well be.
All right. So the question then becomes cybersecurity, I guess, is probably what interests a lot of people, including Congress and the Census Bureau. By the way, we're speaking with Lisa Blumerman. She is the director of the 2020 Census. What's your cybersecurity architecture and plan look like?
Sure. Cybersecurity is very important to us. Trust is the cornerstone of our ability to do our work at the Census Bureau. Folks, respondents need to know that we protect their data and that we take it very seriously. Cybersecurity is built into all of our applications. It's built into all of our interfaces. It's built throughout all of our data collection methods and protections. We've been very fortunate in how we do this, and we're very careful about what we do. We have layered protections that we build in, two-factor authentication. We work hard to ensure the data are encrypted at all points in time, and we ensure that the data are always secure.
And do you have a distributed type of system? Because with the level of data you're going to be collecting, you know, it's like a website that is so widely used, they use a content distribution system so that one server is not the hub for all of this. Do you have that kind of architecture around the country for census?
For the census itself, we're still planning the final architecture for the 2020 census, and we've laid out in our operational plan the schedule for which we'll be doing that. But to your point about a distributed system, that very much is along the lines of what we're thinking about. There's different capabilities that we're using, whether we're talking about self-response and the use of internet for data collection, or we're talking about our field work where we have individuals, hundreds of thousands of individuals out knocking on doors helping us collect information. In both cases, we need to ensure that our network, that our computer systems, that the tools our staff are using are supported. And how we'll do that, we've been phasing in that technology and building that distributed processing system.
And speaking of those tools, the endpoints that that they'd hoped would be used in 2010, the mobile devices, that didn't work out so well. And it ended up, I think Lockheed became the paper collection contractor, if I recall correctly. What is the mobile device strategy this time? And I'm particularly curious as to how you can plan a mobile device now to be used 4 years from now when we have no idea what the state of the art will be in mobile devices at that point. Or maybe you don't want the state of the art.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and I thank you for bringing it up. You know, one of the unique challenges and opportunities of planning an operation as large as the decennial census is we have to think about as we're planning it, whether we're talking about technology, we're talking about human interaction, we're talking about a number of things, but we have to think about it from both the factor of what do we have today, what do we know now, and what will we know in the future? And we have to plan today, we have to build today for what we will implement in the future. You know, this is something we think a lot about. It's something that we talk a lot about in our operational plan. And for this census, we have a very solid foundation for that. When we're looking toward technology, that's a risk for us. And it's a risk, though, that we're actively managing. We learned a lot about what happened in 2010. We learned a lot from the issues that arose. We're not going to make those same mistakes. And we've demonstrated that to date that we won't. We had a successful test in 2013 using technology. We had a successful test in 2014 using additional technology, a successful series of tests in 2015. We're building on each test that we have by layering our technology needs in, all headed to our end-to-end test in 2018.
I mean, is there the possibility that, say, you could freeze the technology approach, say, in, I don't know, I'm making this up, 2019 or 2018, and then maybe if a vendor has an end of life for a device, you could get 10,000 of them for cheap and use the and have the enumerators use those?
So there are lots of things we're planning to do with our acquisition strategy. I think you're very much echoing some of our current thinking in terms of how we're doing it. Our most important point, though, is to really look toward that 2018 end-to-end test. What we are doing is building applications. What we are doing for this census that's different from last census is we are not inventing. We are innovating. We're taking existing hardware. We're taking existing software. We're using COTS products. We're partnering with industry. We're looking at best practices and building off what exists and innovating. And then we're taking those innovations. We're taking those applications that we've built or that have been built, and we're testing them. And we're testing them in a series of tests so that we can ensure they work. Our end-to-end test is critical. That's the test where we begin to bring everything together. We've been layering things in throughout the years, but we need to bring the full suite of products together.
So it sounds like maybe the challenge then is reducing the number of variables so that you only have to change maybe a couple at the very end, say an API for a different processor in a device, as opposed to changing the application or recompiling it at the last minute.
Absolutely. And we have a plan for this. We've laid out a detailed schedule of each test that we have to do, what's in scope for those tests, what's not in scope for those tests, what technology we will be testing with each test. Our end-to-end test in 2018 allows us time to debug. It allows us time in 2019 to fix those things we must fix before we begin the actual count in 2020.
Well, if you need a couple of old Palm Centros, I still have some in a drawer at home, and I'd be glad to donate them to the Census Bureau.
Thank you very much.
But the enumerators will be having this in their hands, and yeah. So there must be a pretty good training mechanism that you've got in the pipeline also.
Absolutely. So both the devices that we're talking about using with the enumerators, the apps that we're looking to do, and the training that we're currently developing and working on are all wonderful areas of innovation for us. In terms of the devices, you know, with each test that we've done, we've been testing on a handheld. In 2014, we tested with an iPhone. In 2015, we were on a Droid-based device. In our 2016 test, we're actually doing a combination of both iPhones and Droids, and we actually put out a contract for this for a service called Device as a Service, where we have a vendor that's actually responsible for procuring, loading the applications on the device and provisioning the devices for us. And they've been able to do that and ensuring we have the right service provider. They've been able to do that for both areas. So we're very excited about testing this.
The operational plan describes four pillars of innovation. Tell us what they are and how they all work together.
The operational plan is the cornerstone of our census design. It really lays out what we're planning to do and how. And when we set about designing the 2020 census, what we wanted to do was to ensure that we could conduct an accurate and fair census at a reduced cost that still allowed us to count every person in the country once and only once and in the right place. When we did that, we began by identifying the major cost drivers of the census. And that led us to look deeply at four areas of innovation for us. The first of those areas is what we call address canvassing. It's really important to understand that for this census, we are going to canvass the entire nation. We're going to canvass the entire nation differently than we did in the last census.
Canvassing means?
Our process for address canvassing is about building the list of addresses in the United States. The foundation of the census is where do people live? And in order to do that, we have to have a list of all the addresses. And so to do that, we do an operation called address canvassing, which is where we confirm what that housing stock is. Where is a house? Where is that address? And where is it on the ground? In the past, what we did in the last census is we walked each and every one of the 11 million blocks in the nation. But in the past, we didn't have data and technology available to us. Now we have aerial imagery. We have mapping applications. We have a wealth of information that we can use in many locations to see where new housing units are being built, where changes occurred in blocks. And we're intending to do that. So for address canvassing, where we believe we can avoid about $1 billion in costs by using these techniques, we're going to do a 100% canvass of the entire nation in our offices. Now, we recognize that we can't possibly find all the housing stock using these imagery, using these data files. So we know we're still going to have to walk some blocks. We believe we'll need to do some infield verification of about 25% of the addresses.
Because if you fly over, say, a place like Brooklyn or a similar type of locale, there's these row upon row of big, tall buildings and Lord knows how many individual addresses are within those buildings. How do you get at that one?
That's exactly it. So there's a couple of ways. First, we do have information from the Postal Service. And those big, large buildings in Brooklyn, they are receiving mail. And because of our very unique relationship with the Postal Service and we work so closely together, we receive at least twice a year a file called the Delivery Sequence File, which is a file of where the Postal Service delivers mail. So that's one data point that we do have for those areas. But that's also an area where we can't see under the roof, and we know that. So we will likely have to send a lister, a human being out who will then go into a building and identify all the housing units that are within that building.
I guess fantastic work if you're, say, retired and in good shape. Sounds like a lot of fun. All right, so address canvassing is one of the pillars.
Sure.
You said there were three other pillars of innovation.
There are three other pillars. So our second pillar of innovation is optimizing self-response. This is about where we engage and motivate people to respond on their own through various mechanisms. This is the first census that we're actively embracing the internet as a response option, and we really want to encourage people to use it. It will be safe, easy, and secure. But if they don't want to use the internet, they can also respond via mail through a paper questionnaire, or they can call us. For this census, we'll have a 1-800 number, which we've had previously, but in the past, people could call for information. For this census, we'll be happy to take their response over the phone if they feel that that's how they'd like to provide it. What we want to do is provide all means possible for the public to self-respond.
And just as an aside, do you envision the online response option being available on mobile devices?
Absolutely. And in fact, in all of our testing, we've optimized our application for mobile. So you can currently use a tablet, you can use a handheld, you can use whatever device you would like to respond to the census.
All right. The census app coming to your phone soon. All right. So address canvassing,
our third area
optimizing self-response.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Our third area of innovation is our ability to use administrative records and third-party data to help us improve the census process. We're looking to use administrative records and commercial data, which is what we mean when we say third-party data, in ways that we've never used it before. We've always used some of these data in our processing. For example, sometimes when we work with a university to understand the student population, we'll work with the university administrator, and instead of knocking on every dorm room, they'll provide us with a list. Or if we're enumerating people in prisons or jails, we may not canvass every individual in those jails, but the administrators of those prisons and jails will provide us with administrative data. So using administrative data is not new to us, but we're looking to use it in new ways.
So administrative is federal and state and local, possibly?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Federal, state, and local, all different sorts of government information that we can partner with. A great example of some local data that we're using throughout the census process is we've worked very closely with local governments for some of their aerial imagery and their administrative data on addresses. And that's been a huge help to us.
And just another question on that whole idea is with the number of immigrants in the country, either legally or illegally, let's say illegally, those are required to be counted also, correct?
Sure. The census doesn't care about an individual's legal status. We care about all the individuals, all the population that are in the United States. Our job is to count everyone, regardless, once and only once and in the right place.
But if there are 10 or 11 million of those people that are not documented or illegal, let's just use that number, that's a pretty decent percentage of the entire population and one that might be reluctant to want to respond, even though you're not going to report them to Immigration and Customs Enforcement. But how do you deal with that challenge? Yeah.
You know, this isn't a new problem for us in terms of how we reach people and encourage them to respond. There are lots of population groups that have questions or concerns about the census. One of the areas and one of the ways we reach them is through our partnership program. We work very closely with local trusted voices in the community who can get out, ministers, preachers, a representative of a youth center, who can get out into the community and help explain the importance. The census brings needed services to people. The data are so important beyond just the apportionment counts. And having everyone participate is the best way to do it. And this has been a proven success for us.
Okay, and that fourth pillar of innovation.
Absolutely. The fourth pillar is in some ways one of the most exciting areas that people will see. And this is our ability to re-engineer our field operations. Here we're looking to use technology to help us more efficiently and effectively manage our staff and manage our work. We're bringing technology in, things that we see every day when we go home or we walk around. You know, when we order a package online, that delivery person is using an automated tool to help them know where to go. We've never done this before. We've been a paper and pencil operation. We're partnering with industry on how best to do this, how we can manage the cases, how we can manage the work so that we can efficiently and effectively do that. The result of that is tremendous savings for the taxpayers. And we're very excited about this.
All right, so you said earlier that there was a $5.2 billion mm-hmm. cost the last time. What are you trying to come in at in 2020?
So the cost avoidance was actually, if we're allowed to implement the census as we've designed it today, we believe we can save $5.2 billion over the cost of repeating the 2010 census in 2020. So the cost for the census that we have designed today, the life cycle cost, is about $12.5 billion. If we had to execute the 2010 design, that old paper and pencil design, we would be looking at about $17.8 billion based on what we know today. That's how we can avoid $5.2 billion in cost.
We're speaking with Lisa Blumerman. She is the director of the 2020 census. And talk, if you will, for a moment about the role of contractors in all of this. What are they doing for you? And do you have a prime? I mean, how does it all work?
Sure. So the census itself is a huge undertaking in terms of planning our operation. We have released the design of the census 3 years earlier than we ever have before. We're very excited about that because it gives us a firm foundation. 2016 is a critical year for us in terms of our contractor support and some of the big contracts that we have to have in place for the census. And one of the reasons that I'm really excited about it is that we're in a position to award those contracts 1 year earlier than we did for the last census. So actually just released this week was our request for proposal for our census questionnaire assistance contract. This is a very large contract for the 2020 census that will set up not just the telephony industry where people call that 1-800 line, but for this census, we're looking to expand our uses beyond the telephone, recognizing that the internet is a big opportunity for us, having media available like web chat. And so that request for proposal went out this week, and we were on schedule to award that contract in June of this year. Later in January, we will be putting out our request for proposal for our integrated communications and partnership contract. This is our big advertising and partnership contract, and we are on track and on schedule to award that contract by August of this year. And so we're really excited about both of these opportunities for us to partner with the private sector. We're also really excited about it because it is a full year earlier. That allows us to have these operations, these contracts in place, up and running, do some testing with our 2017 census test, and be ready to roll for our 2018 end-to-end test.
All right. So with all of these changes coming and implementing in this 2020 count, what are some of the human capital training issues that you've been involved with for census's own people?
You know, people, our employees, our staff, our enumerators, our listers, both at headquarters, our regional offices, and throughout the country, they're the cornerstone to our success. And recognizing the value that people bring and what they can do is so important. So this question is a great one. I truly appreciate it. We can't do the census alone. We can't do it just from headquarters. We are continually assessing our competencies and our skills gaps. This is something we do on an ongoing basis to understand where we need to reach out, where we need to do more training, where we need to hire more. We currently have about 1,000 people at headquarters working on the census. That's just going to continue to grow over the next few years. We do lots of different things for knowledge management. We have an ongoing knowledge management program. We have ongoing training programs. And in fact, for our enumerators for the 2020 census, we have completely re-engineered our process for training our enumerators. It used to be a 3-day process where we would bring our enumerators into a room and we would do verbatim training. We would talk at them for 3 days. Now it's an interactive combination of online modules that individuals can do on their own, combined with one day in-classroom touchpoint where we're focused on interactive training and working with the technology, working with an instructor one-on-one. It's just a really exciting time, and we're reaching into all different ways to be able to train, develop, and ensure we have the appropriate workforce.
And what about the physical security of enumerators that are out there in the field, sometimes not in the best neighborhoods in the United States?
We work very hard with all of our enumerators so that they understand what they're supposed to do at any point. In some of the harder areas to enumerate, we don't send people in alone. We specifically pair people up. We'll send in 2, 3, 4 enumerators depending on the area or what needs to be done. But we take their physical security very, very seriously.
And as director, what is an average day like for you?
Busy. You know, the census is a ton of fun to work on. It's just an amazing opportunity to be part of something like this. And these opportunities don't come along often. We are changing the census. We are re-engineering what we do. And the improvements and the innovations that we're putting together will benefit not just the census, not just the Census Bureau's programs, but all of the statistical programs that we do within the United States. It's an absolutely amazing opportunity to be part of it, and I'm really honored and proud to do it.
Lisa Blumerman is Assistant Director of the Census for the 2020 count. Hear both parts of this interview and share them with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.